Hello, dear heart. Welcome to the Flourishing Practitioners podcast, where we talk all things about space holding, caring for our clients, and succeeding in our businesses. We explore the wisdom from coaches, counselors, and healers. My name's Gabrielle Walker, and I'm so honored that you're here. Let's dive in. This conversation with Hawatea Bryson is one that we had in 2020. A lot of these views stand for me, although different things have changed along the way. It's so interesting to observe the flow in terms of what I'm thinking, how I view Rumi Rumi, and also to know inside of me the things that have changed. So please enjoy this. I feel it's quite a comprehensive discussion, and I hope it serves those ears that it finds. At the time of this conversation, the Black Lives Matter movement was happening, was in full swing. I remember personally being processing a lot about my upbringing and how I thought, and having trouble splitting things into black and white, and this really comes through in this conversation. In any case, I didn't realize how much these podcasts would be a connection in time that allows us to keep sharing and evolving, and in some ways timeless. These discussions are still going on, even if the same protests aren't. And I hope that you connect with us on the Flourishing Healing Practice Instagram if you feel the call.
Ah, he mihi tēnei ke whakatūwhera tēnei hui. E I o nau I hangia tēnei ao marama mō tātou, heki iho ki a rangi, rawa ko pāpā, mena atua, nei rā te mihi ki a koutou e. Mihi atu kina ahi kāroa ko Aotearoa, ko Papakanui a Maui, ko Hawaii nei, mena maunga, nā awa, nā ahi kāroa. Ki konei. Mihi atu ki a koe, mō tō mahi, tō nākau, tō kōrero, no harikoa ahau ki te kōrero tahi, pai ake tō mahi.
Kia ora, me atu tō mō, ki te mihi, kia nui o ngā tangata whenua o Nonga Boja mō ko o tō oku tīpuna kei noho mai nā atua me nā tūpuna kua oho o aroha o taua kōrero. Kia ora.
Kia ora. Kia ora. So I know that you've been hosting this healing series now for how many months?
It began when the Rahui time started, so maybe 2 months.
Curious what inspired you to do that. And I know you're such a, you know, at the heart of the constellations of healers and bringing people together. But yeah, I'm just curious what sparks went off.
There was a number of things. On one level, I had the desire to set the foundations for where I wanted to go with this mahi. And I felt like I didn't want to speak to lots of the things that we got to speak about in the Kōrero Manimiri in terms of, like, we know that, but maybe those who are really interested in walking into that space don't know some of those foundational aspects of Māori healing and where they come from. Yet in my own journey, I don't want to speak there at the moment. I wanted to sort of expand my energy and go to where I am. But on the other side, I also felt the uprising and the energy of Māori healing and Māori energy globally. And I could sense a shift in the way it was being received by my clients, but also people online. And I knew that as a collective, we're somehow more powerful. It felt a little bit, not that we were working separately, but sometimes that was the vibe that I got. And I just had this desire to, like, work in collaboration, because we're all here for the same mission, really, at the end of the day, and to work on that both within myself, but also within the space.
Beautiful. And are you meaning that more that return to the traditional methods, traditional ways and knowing when you're talking about opening
totally,
up?
Totally. So there's two aspects of it. I think one part is that we all have different pieces of the puzzle and together it's a whole. And so I could never share with, say, my trainees everything, and nor would I want to, because my upbringing and my gifts are different. Yet I witnessed that in my own journey. Sometimes hearing one sentence is such a gift. It opens up so much in terms of my abilities or what I can share. And I sort of wanted to have that there for those who needed to find that. And then on the other hand, it is that I often say from my work that I am combining the ancient and the emerging. So the work that I collect in Wānanga is just as important as the traditional methods, and for me, in terms of my practice. And so really, embedding some of those things, because it's ever changing, right? The energies and the way that we practice. And I wanted to capture the essence of the powerful mahi that we're all doing. And somehow, I don't know exactly, it wasn't like totally on a conscious level, but to bring us together somehow.
Well, that's a really good starting point too for us in just, asking like, no hia koe, like where are you from, and what are maybe some of those po or those supports that you do introduce your mahi?
Ko take te mito ko wakatapu, ko momo kai toko maunga, ko nuhaka menga mohaka oku awa, ko Ngāti Kahungungu, Ngāti Rongomai Wahine, Ngāti Pahuera, e rangatane oku iwi. Noa fielding aho, e tipu aku au i fielding. E noho ana mai anaya nei e Perth, Western Australia, no ngā Budja, ko Ngāti Pākehā, the oku iwi. So I grew up as in a mixed race household, I guess, a Māori father and a non-Māori mother. But I always felt more drawn to my Māori family initially. That's changed as I've gone over and learned a lot more about my own whakapapa on both sides. But when I was a child, I was just like, I don't know, I was like hungry for everything Māoritanga. Like, my auntie once told me, they've got a video, I haven't seen it as an adult, but of me, was it at one of the sharing gang competitions when they used to share the sheep, and my grandparents were like, they would cut scrub and do sharing and all this sort of thing, and I was literally like clinging to my nan, like I couldn't get enough of her. So I'd say she's one of my po. Yeah, but as I've gone along, my journey's been, my po in terms of my mahi and this work has shifted and changed, and it has, I feel like the Māori tanga and te ao Māori is such the foundation of everything that I do, but that also evolves for me in terms of how it looks and feels. And I became, I would say, more of a responsible Māori person actually being on Noongar Budja, my involvement with Aboriginal people here, and then because of their history with the stolen generation and whiteness and accepting people regardless of their colour, I actually found a huge healing in that, because growing up as the white Māori girl, sometimes I was really like confused about my identity in that way. So it wasn't something that I had the confidence to share often until I had those healings here through my connection with Noongar people in Perth.
You said something about, being born with that Māori identity, and then when you did a whiteness course in university and connecting that with the white privilege, and at this time right now, while we're really going through these really big cultural awakenings, part of anti-racism is also the deep respect and love of culture at the same time. And so I'm just curious, like, where you sit right now and how like your journey is informing you in both as a bridge person and as a Māori wahine.
I feel, it's strange, but right now I feel as if I've been trained for this moment somehow. Like, what I witnessed, and this is more here, so my family, I was saying this to someone the other day, that sometimes it's hard to have those discussions about race when you're in it, right? And somehow being outsider or from another culture, I've found that when I've lived in different countries, sometimes I can see culture in a different way. And so living in Australia and witnessing shocking behavior to Aboriginal people from non-Aboriginal people, like my brain couldn't comprehend it. And so in that process, I ended up working in a lot of Aboriginal organizations, and also because I felt more at home. I don't think I felt at home in Perth until I found Aboriginal people, to be honest. Like, it was like, what is this place? And then as I got to connect with that Indigenous spirit, it was like, oh, okay, I'm home. You know, I felt that more of that connection. But as in terms of what is happening now, I feel very white in terms of colour and Māori in terms of heart. Mm-hmm. So I feel that it's important to acknowledge my privilege, because I honestly, it was really funny doing that whiteness course, because it sounds funny, but I hadn't clicked that I was white. Like I had just grown up not being white. Like, but then when I learned privilege, so like understanding that colour and the experiences you have because of your colour and your culture, they're actually two different things, even though often the experiences of persecution that come from colour does inform culture.
Yes.
And so often, you know, that the whanaungatanga and things like that is because we had to survive on our own. And so we had to support each other. There wasn't that support from the other systems. And that is culture, which I have, that I believe in, and I can't help but practice because I grew up within that culture. But I also have the option to jump in and out of the waka as I need to, and or as I choose to. And that's a privilege to be able to do that. So it's complex.
Yeah.
But what I feel about this time right now is that from an energetic standpoint, any energy that's not any energy that's repressed has to be expressed. So I'm actually happy it's happening out on the streets rather than in individual people's families and their own lives. You know, the harm that holding that trauma in your body holds, I think that it's being expressed. And as what sometimes sensitive white people, our cultural inheritance is that we don't talk about things that are hard and difficult. We talk around things. We're very good at articulating things in a way that's not direct. And right now we can't help but speak directly.
Yeah, and that's interesting, just in like, I'm hearing a lot this week, these stories of when I learned that I was white, or when I learned that I was black, or when I learned that I was brown, and how old I was, and sort of what you're talking about, like jumping in and off the waka, the privilege of, and I know this is true for generations above us as well, of not having to identify, like being able to hide the cultural identity, but also the shame that is on the inside when we do that. Or even if, you know, with your Māori heart, if we can jump off the waka and then identify as a white person or a bridge person, there's still that piece inside of us that's not being able to be seen.
Mm.
So yeah, just really appreciating what you're talking about too, about being able to lift this out of the body and get it out in the open, and for this expression to kind of come forth. And have you been I'm just curious about your experience of cultural trauma in the body.
Cultural trauma. That's a really good question, because it's a lot of who I'm seeing here. Because in Australia and Perth, the trauma people are experiencing is they're not having been able to access, you know, whenua or their turumu waiwai, or having been able to grow up culturally. And I didn't actually appreciate what I had until I arrived here. It was like, that was just how I grew up. I thought all Māori people had the same experience that I had growing up. Yeah, I arrived here and there was people who were darker than me, but were yearning, like deeply yearning. And the way that I sense that in the body when I'm doing body work is very, it's like the block. I feel like my main potential is a backstory. My main skill set is being able to feel when people are in alignment with their potential. And so it feels like in not being able to acknowledge their nākau or their manawa, that is Māori, that is calling them home, their tēpuna are calling them, and not being able to even acknowledge that because of whatever conditioning they received here. Or lots of people who are in Australia, and I'm not speaking for all families, but lots of people are coming away from some of the maybe darker sides of our culture from that have arisen from that trauma. And so maybe they've been told stories about that rather than the beauty of our culture. So they're really confused. So that shows in the body in terms of how the energy flows. If we're looking at how I design, when I'm working that for me, when the energy flows like that, and we're it's moments of time that we get that in our existence, but we're looking for that flow where it's just going around. When people are repressing a part of themselves, and it can be cultural, not culture, it's more like that you'll come to a point and there's a block, and it's wanting to express. You can feel the energy wanting to go there, and yet for some reason that's not yet accessible.
Yeah, so even as you're saying that, just feeling how shame sits in the body. Mm-hmm. And you know, when we talk about pride, I think that word is misconstrued in the Western contemporary world, but that pride of, do you have another word for that? That sort of alignment or acceptance. You know, what would it look like? What would be the opposite look like if someone felt was really aligned and embracing of their cultural identity?
I feel like it's that just your mana, the mana that you're holding, like, and your manawa. And when you have your internal strength aligned so that it can be recognized and accepted by your community, because sometimes it's not just within the body, it's the flow in and out of the body and the way that the power comes forth, whether it's a power over others or a collaboration with others or a recognition of like you're in your mana also and I'm in my mana and that's safe. And so energy is not just flowing in the body, but when there's this attempt for it to come out of the body and it feels shut down, then it can be...
And so that's where we're really headed, is this place of being able to embrace our own mana and be one another's mana.
And I realized that in my journey, that I feel the most comfortable in people who are comfortable in themselves. And that requires you to be in your mana. And I feel uplifted when you're in your mana. And it uplifts me, and I have more capacity and my inspiration's happening. When someone is holding that back, it's like, it's almost an uncomfortability. It's like, something's off. Yeah. And it's not like, yay, I want to be around you. I want to be around people who are in their mana. And so, that's one of the things I'm so grateful for in our culture, is being able to see those wahine tour and those tāne tour, like express and pūkana and show a different archetype of what a woman can be.
And that feels like such an answer to the times right now too, because I'm hearing this sort of statement coming across of we all need to go back to being one culture.
Mm.
And for me, that feels so intensely sad, that sort of assimilating or, and so really what you're speaking so clearly of, like if everyone was to stand in their mana and their celebration, and that as one person does, the other person like we just gift permission.
When people say, oh, we're all the same, or I don't see color, you're first of all, it's like disregarding a total experience of a culture that is a very, and which culture wins in terms of the sameness. Mm-hmm. And what are we losing as a world even from a food perspective? If I had to eat English food, meat and free veg every day, I would be bored. As you know, what diversity brings us is divine. And then on the other hand, it's like this, I get on the higher levels, like on the, when we are fully in our expanded, like when we're, you know, journeying through the Whatumanawa and we're in our expanded consciousness, like we are all one and it is the same, but that's not what we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, I just hear also so in there is both the grief of the loss of those things and also like the claim of celebrating it.
And there's always multiple truths, right? I also feel really lucky for what I've gained by coming from two different cultural backgrounds. Like I feel blessed to have had that upbringing to be able to navigate these worlds. It is a privilege, but it's also a blessing. And I think people who come from multiple cultures probably feel the same. Many others feel the same. But there is a grief that's inevitable within the process of colonization and the energetics of that and the resulting actions that people had to take or felt they had to take or were forced to take, and all that energy and their mana that suffered from that. I don't think as a species we can fully heal until we acknowledge that every single one of us, that colonizer and the colonized within us.
Yeah, I think that none of us are immune from that discussion or from that internal reflection. And, you know, as you're describing, like, your work with Romi Romi and also as a trainer in Romi Romi and as a bridge person who walks both these worlds, and I know you've described a little bit about that in your work. Is there any other ways that you describe to people what you do? Or describe what Romi Romi is?
For me, I normally describe it as a bodywork practice that works on different dimensional levels but clears spiritual, emotional and physical blockages. And I usually say to people that it'll show up differently for you depending on where you're at in your journey or how energy channels through for the session. So that's normally how I explain it. I'm surprised sometimes what channels through. I'm like, oh, okay, we're doing this. It is really beautiful, a beautiful healing process, and one of the most powerful that I've seen or experienced in both my own healing, but also in the healing of those who come on the table before.
And I know we all have these different kuwaha or doorways that open in our lives. I'm curious about what doorways opened up for you into this mahi and into Romi Romi specifically.
So I'm not sure what year it was, maybe 2008. I randomly saw a post from Atarangi and Manu about a Māori healing training that they were doing here in Perth. And I wasn't really thinking that that was something I would do at that time. I just was curious, you know, that feeling. And I remember being so nervous. I was like, I think I showed up late. I was just like agitated. I was looking for my ponamo or something. And, you know, and that agitated, wider feeling when you're like, something's going to happen. But I didn't have that awareness right then.
So it hesitates at the door.
So I attended that training then. And then I sort of went back to my life. I didn't do much with it at that time. And it wasn't until maybe 2012. And I experienced quite a few different traumatic things at that time. And it's all swished together. So I'm not entirely sure of the timeline. But my dad had a brain aneurysm. And at the same, he went into a coma for 6 days, I think. And at the same time, my koro, my GAMPS in New Zealand was in a coma. And I also had a miscarriage and a breakup around that time. And so it was like I'd been pushing my tupuna away. Not that I wasn't listening, I was sort of listening, but it was more if I was in trouble, you know, like, oh, stuff's bad, like, help. And suddenly it was like all the walls just fell down and I couldn't ignore what was happening, and it was really full on. Yeah, so after that, it was like all these synchronicities just kept happening. So people would randomly ask me if I was a healer, I was sharing things on Facebook just about my journey, and people began asking me to coach them, and it sort of opened from there. Like, it's not linear, but it all sort of happened synchronously.
Just the natural birth of the healer. I know you, in your trainings, when you teach, you also talk a lot about the power of authenticity. Healers. Can you speak about the importance of that?
I see. And I feel, and I think there's two types of healers. There's one who is here to maintain the codes of the traditional path. And then there's one here who's more of a code collector. They're two different energetics of being. And I'm more one who is about us all expressing our own strength and power in the way that it needs to move through us. And I see both in the trainees that I have, but also in other healers, that we all collect or attract or magnify different types of beings or different types of people. And so if you're trying to copy me or another healer, you're not going to be in full alignment of how energy wants to work with you, or your tupuna wants to work with you, or kaitiaki want to work with you. And the beauty of us having different backgrounds and nationalities and energy sources and even hearing energy or spirit or source in different ways is that it works differently with you. How I hear or sense or smell is going to not be the way you hear or sense or smell, but I can share my experience in the hope that that expands your understanding of what is possible. So, yeah, it feels more just that that's amplifying the way energy can work.
Yeah, and I think that's actually quite a mature role of looking at how we uphold tikanga and also make it really authentic to us, so that we're not just we're no longer in relationship with the material. We're just, you know, as soon as we take it verbatim, we're no longer connected to it. And that, so just hearing how you support people to really allow those teachings to flow through them.
Yeah, and even if you think about how tohunga or people learn traditionally back in the day, it wasn't that they were giving a course outline and here's the points on the body and this is what you do. They were in wananga constantly, and even how we learned from our grandparents, it was very, like, you just picked up bits stuck and bits didn't, right? So I feel I teach in a very indigenous way, but also trying to place a framework around it to acknowledge the Western context in which we exist. At the same time, it's like, I could share this thing that's really linear and you'll still only remember what you're meant to remember. There's no way to compare. This is how I want you to learn it. That's not possible.
Yes, and so you're also teaching in a way that really considers our modern way of learning from books and texts and that structure.
Yeah, I have handbooks and things, but I also try to, it's a constant, it's similar to that colonizer non-colonizer dance. It's sort of a constant dance of acknowledging that I like that as well. It helps me, or it, because there's codes in everything, right? There's activations in everything, so there can be activations in an image or a word, or there's, and we all learn in different ways. So my goal is to have as many activated healers as possible, because our world bloody needs them. You know, so I'm like, that's my goal. So and the many ways that I can reach the people to step into that space in whatever capacity they need to, that's what I'm moving towards.
So just as you're like clearly seeing the person on the table, you're also doing that with the healers that you're training, of like trying to see and pull forward.
And I see that in our life too. Like I see it in my life. Okay, if I push that button in my life, like what impact will it have on the energy flow? I see that in, it's our whole ecosystem. Or if that happens, that button gets pushed there. One of the things that I speak about in the training that I talk to, I can't remember, I think it's in Kauai 2, is the different archetypes we have to step into as a healer. So there can be a point where sometimes you have to step into like the mother archetype to like really hold that nurturing space, that loving space. And then other times it's like you step into that wahine tour, like if you, this needs to come now, like you're being a victim now or whatever. These different archetypes, and I feel like it's similar with our life. Like if I pause and wait now, what impact will I have? Or if I take action, if I call that person or reach out, what impact will that have? It's almost to me like a roimata or haimata, like pressing that point, what will the ripples be? And I see it in everything.
And do you check in with those same in your own life too, in terms of your energy? In terms of the patience of waiting or the action of don't delay?
Constantly, yeah.
And is there a way that you touch into that for yourself?
I think it's a learned experience. So over time, I feel like this has been my experience as a healer, that I can't help but, as I'm working on bodies and listening to other people's lives, have that reflected in the areas where the energy isn't flowing optimally in my life or nourishingly or in respect of others. And so it's almost as if it's like an constant observation of the impacts that actions or just waiting or whatever have, and then over time learning the patterns that are more in alignment and feel more in flow than other things that don't, because many people maybe haven't listened to that degree. It's almost as though the expectation is that your tūpuna will just be speaking clearly to you from the minute that happens sometimes, for sure. I've seen that happen and experienced that. But initially, it's just building trust and observing, what does my body feel like when I eat cereal? What does my body feel like when I eat toast? What does my body feel like when I wear a dress? What is my, you know, and starting to know what what is in alignment or what flows with energy. And to me, it's exactly the same as bodywork. I know it sounds different, but it's in terms of the energetics of it. It's like what's flowing or what's not, what's blocking, what's out of alignment, what needs to go, what needs to stay. Everything's energy.
So would there be questions that you check in with yourself regularly? Like, where's my energy blocked? How does my energy message?
Usually it's if I'm feeling blocked. Like, if I'm feeling blocked, I'm like, okay, what are the energetics here that aren't in alignment for me? Often when if I'm feeling overwhelmed or a certain emotion, I'll ask, is this mine? Because I'm not sure if you have that experience, but as a healer, people's Wairua will begin visiting to educate me on what I need to be able to hold as when they're coming. And so sometimes I'll be feeling something and I'm like, gosh, you know, I haven't felt this feeling since I was 20, or it's like, poof, okay. And then ask that question and then be aware that it's someone else. In my own life, it's a range of tools depending on the circumstance. And I feel like in different segments of our life, we can be different ages. For example, I feel like as a healer, quite mature at the moment in terms of where I feel in terms of flow and networking, but say my love life, not as mature and flow, maybe in my, I feel like I'm getting older as I go along, but initially I was like, I feel like I'm 16 when I'm dating, you know, yet as a person, people meet me and they see me as my mature self. So it's like we transition through different ages and different segments or areas of our life.
Oh, it's really refreshing hearing you speak that too, of even feeling how maybe the 16-year-old energy is what's needed in your dating life. Actually, it's different ages of energy for different things, just like as describing different energies and different archetypes for different things.
Mm.
And I really love the question too of like, what's my relationship with this feeling and is it mine? That even the 16-year-old can have a wisdom.
She's awesome. I love her. I'm like...
experience that in Te Ao Māori as well, that like, you know, the elders that I really look up to, they have this breadth in their archetypal energy. Yeah,
totally. One thing I feel isn't in terms of, you know, Te Ao Māori coming more globally being understood, sometimes people get confused with spirituality because they feel like the Buddha view is that we're just basically aiming for eo. We're aiming for that sense of kurikuri and that amplified feeling of expansion. And any time that different atua or energies come in or different dimensional things come in, you're being asked to ignore them because they're not real. Whereas in Te Ao Māori, we're like, come on, work with me, move here. They're very real to us and they're part of our daily existence and we are collaborating with them often. And I think that that's the key difference to acknowledge in terms of our work and for people to understand that so they're not feeling that bodily dissonance in their own practice, because many people who are coming to see me have that practice as well. Yeah, it's just naming it allows you to feel how you feel around energies and how you want to use them in your life. And are you aiming to have that sense of equity all the time, or are you wanting to dance with these atua because they want to dance with you?
Oh, I love how you're really addressing like spiritual bypass through the frame of na atua. And is that anything that you've been taught as well, or has that come through your experience of sort of connecting our emotional reality and how we want to bypass it?
Taught in what sense?
Well, just how uncomfortable it can be to have different feelings and this bypass of wanting to kind of be in this higher state and only maintain good feelings, and how that, you know, doesn't hold, isn't integrated, isn't reality. And I just see you really speaking about it through a Māori view. I'm curious about, do you ever talk about the atua in that with your clients? Or
I'm very much a person who speaks to energy, so it depends on the client. And in coaching I do, yet in rumirumi I tend to only offer guidance or words when they ask me, because I believe they've had their experience and that's their experience to have and their experience to share their story if they want to, or ask me what I saw if they want to, and then I'll respond. So I'm sometimes it will come through that, oh, this atua was here or this tūpuna. And sometimes there's a different feeling, like when someone's on the table, it's almost like there's a different feeling from I'm just seeing what's stored in the body and I'm seeing the experience, which doesn't need to be voiced. And okay, someone is here and they want to speak. But it's like in my body, it feels really different. And sometimes it's really funny. Actually, I was just thinking a client of mine, this was pre-Rahui time, and his dad came through. And initially I was like, no, you know, I don't talk in session. You know, I was still probably in my body. And then it was like three times. And then my music turned off. And I was like, okay, I have to talk, you know. So sometimes I do push tūpuna away initially, unless they persist, because I feel that that person is in their experience. And yeah.
Oh, that's such a beautiful discernment in the healer for honouring their relationship to their tūpuna. And really waiting for that, just checking that you've got that.
Yeah, and I don't think that came from experience. I think initially when I first began doing this work that I wanted to be like, this is what I see, now validate me. You know, there was that sense of, oh, it's all open and like I'm telling you, and that didn't feel good in my body after a while. It was like, what am I trying to, I'm trying to get validated for the tohu that I'm seeing or the tūpuna who are coming through, and that's so, you know, it's not my role. We're more of a vessel, and wairua and tūpuna aren't always good as well. So it's that discernment of knowing and trusting that we're also able to work with energy wisely.
And I wonder if that's also why we have such a need for wānanga spaces, to be able to check and learn and get that validation and start to, because, you know, a lot of the role of the healer is that self-trust and yet that what you're speaking to, that the real responsibility of being in that integrity when you're in a healing session, especially when someone's coming in a vulnerable place. And
totally. And I loved that when you said that, like when we spoke about that responsibility as a healer, I feel that exactly the same. We have such a deep responsibility. Like people are gifting us their traumas, their dreams, their hopes, their shame. They're gifting that with the hope that the space that's created can be alchemized for that to be a different reality. I'm getting tingles. It's such a beautiful experience to hold, yet it's such a deep responsibility. And one thing that I found, maybe because it's just the number of us that there are, and this is part of this, back to your earlier question of like why the kōrero mirimiri were important to me, is that when people are training to be a psych, they have a supervisor who they can touch base with and they can talk to about any projection or any feelings they're having inside them that aren't in alignment or different things that came up. Like initially at one stage I only had male clients, and so I wasn't used to being able to see a man in his true vulnerability, like releasing in the way that Rumi often brings up in people. And that wasn't my perception of how a man was, and so I had to go and seek mentors to be able to hold that space for them purely, because my human self was like, this isn't what a man's meant to be like. You know, I had that judgment of the experiences that they were having. Now I don't have that at all, but that we do also need a safe space as healers to go to be able to really work on any perceptions we have that are also blocking that wairua from being really pure, or also not allowing us to hold that space for the responsibility we're being given. And with great power comes great responsibility, and it is a beautiful awakening process that's happening for all of us. And it's almost as though if we take ourselves out of that process of our own self-healing responsibility and place ourselves as the teacher without that, it's a bit disconnected.
Yeah, and I can also see your role in that mentoring role with students, and just how naturally you own those moments and speak them, and how that just frees up the space for us to really look at those things in ourselves and see them as part of the journey. So I'm really grateful for how you walk that and the ripples. I know that we've talked before about ancestral blessing and ancestral messing. Do you have any you know, new insights on that today or anything that's just alive right now in that whakaro?
I want to acknowledge that my journey with the concept of ancestral messing actually came from my work in South Africa that I was doing with a healer there. And they have the view that different lineages can have different objectives for you as a person. And the way that the tīpuna are guiding you, it's almost how they were describing it, is that it's not always helping you to align. At the same time, I think that that thought for me interacted with the thing my nan always said to me, which is why I think I've never been scared of spirit. But nan was always like, you've got a body, you're alive, you tell them what to do. You know, she was really clear on that. And so, but I'd also grown up with like such reverence and respect for my tīpuna. It was always like, even though despite when you heard stories and you were like, ooh, there was still that deep respect, and I still have that. But I think that that respect overpowered some of the healing that needed to be done in my lines, and some of the acknowledgement of the complexity of how I came to be. And whiteness has been in my family since colonization. Many of my tūpuna came from that settlement process and the gifting of women to Pākehā men and things like that, and the pain and everything that's mixed in with that. So for me, it was this journey through the lines, through the whakapapa, both on a spirit level, but also on an understanding of, they're not these gods. They are also, I see it as like they're ascending as we ascend in a way, like as we heal and we shift, they heal and they shift. And then they're able to gift their mana to us once they feel that their message has been heard. And when I mentioned earlier around that time where suddenly my tūpuna were really talking to me, it was quite full on, but they were saying some of them were saying they had never met me because I hadn't been at a space to receive them. And they were also that they needed their story to be told. And it's really cool because my sister's a historian. She's used to work for the Waitangi Tribunal. She works here now. But at that time, you know, she had access to those databases, and I would tell her what I was being told, and then she would go and find the story for us. And it's been so healing for us as a family. It's made me see that we're also in collaboration with our tīpuna, and it's all happening at once, and that journey, that it's like they're still a bit more maybe pure than humans in some ways, but they're also not completely enlightened either. And so that's the blessing and messing can sometimes be the discernment again of, yeah, is this message for me? Is this message for me now?
Yeah, and when you said that, I really wondered if part of that being more pure is just more that they're no longer in te ao tangata, except that they live through us and through the whakapapa, now in te ao wairua, but it informs this one. So yeah, it's interesting hearing you. I loved what you said about how they gift us mana when we're ready to receive it.
It's a blessing to have them, like.
And bringing it back to just that piece about cultural shame or cultural working in the body, as you were talking about the claim of mana in that, also seeing it in what you're talking about with the whakapapa lines, just connecting those two pieces.
Totally. Yeah, because it's like, and there's so many things that when we're growing up, because we only have our time perspective, our time culture, we're from here, it would be like, why did that happen? How could that happen? But there's different things that have happened as you get older. You're like, oh, that's why that, like you're just suddenly seeing, like, I don't know about in your whānau, but in mine, the stories were very masculine. It was very much like our whakapapa was down the male lines. It wasn't until I began doing this healing work that I even thought about like the wahine and their stories and what it must have been like to be having given to a white man, and that all of that process, it's just like, so then that healing had to begin as well, and the mana of those wahine, like, they're amazing.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot too, and I've experienced it myself, of that we have a, not a preferable line, but a line that's been given preference by our parents or by the other generations, and then part of it is the recovery of the other line, and maybe that's what we're coming to in these conversations.
Yeah, and I remember at my nan's tangi, and it was this real sense of, like, just, I was 18 or something, but I remember sitting at the tangi and just, it was like everyone held a different puzzle piece. Like she had gifted everyone different knowledge. That's how I see our iwi, and that's how I see Māori as a whole. None of us has it all. Every person has a different piece of the puzzle, because it is, our culture is that expansive, and it is that powerful, and it is that amazing, that each person has a piece. And if we begin having kōrero around this, then yeah, we can activate those rememberings in others, because it's not lost. It's just that it's been stored in the body for us in future generations. And I love that saying about mokopuna, like grandchildren, is the moko being gifted to the grandchild, and that it's with us even if we don't wear it. It's with us.
Oh, I just want to really mihi to your nan too, because she's been so present in this whole today.
I would say she doesn't like to miss anything.
Grateful to her, just really feel her. And I'm also curious if you mihi to the tupuna of when you're in a session with someone, or if there is a way that you acknowledge. I'm just feeling in that acknowledgement of this kaupapa, how that's like coming through, and I'm curious if
in the session it really depends. I feel like they're just with me all the time, so I don't always mihi to them, but I find that different tupuna come through depending on what the person's holding. I have a few like back ones that come when it's like really like heavy stuff, and so I normally know when they come before a session. I'm like, oh, so, you know, start preparing myself. But they're not there generally in most sessions. It's like one of my main tupuna who works with me in sessions. I don't actually know that much about her line, because she was whangai, and it was complex in many different ways, but I don't know that much about her line. But she's one of my main tupuna who actually works for me on the daily, and then the others come in depending on what's needed. And I also find, I don't know if you find this, but sometimes the words that are coming through are asking forgiveness from the tupuna of the person lying on the table before we can even begin the session. So I feel like a mihi in that way, that always there, it's always.
Yes, and that happens a lot because we have more relationships than we know. And I love that what you said about not knowing necessarily her history, but you get to keep learning that even though she's not physically here. It's like, how would you describe the spiritual aspect of Romi Romi? I know we've been talking to that a lot, and I'm assuming that you get asked that. Yeah, as a bridge person who's sharing your spiritual reality of working with your spiritual family. And
it's so interesting. I recently had a woman sort of review my website and one of the things, and it's not, she's not the first one to say this, but one of the things that came up was that translating Māori words, I find that hard sometimes, and it's not from my lack of desire to share with you what I know, but it's like it can't be contained within English. The practice can't be contained within the way spirituality is discussed within a Western context. And the experience can't be explained in a framework. It's magic. And it weaves differently for each person. And it is what you're calling in at that moment and what you're working on. And I find it hard to do that, but I feel like I've gotten better at explaining it. But in a spiritual context, I see Māori tanga and spirituality and our wairua is just humanness. It's actually not separate. It's all the same. So this is just a practice to get us to be more human.
I also love in your answer, it just reminds me of those kaumātua who answer a question with another question. In hearing that, how complete your answer feels of, you know, describing spirituality, of that it doesn't actually fit into this paradigm. And the specific way you did that of just being like such a, it has the effect of suddenly widening, you know, my view and in receiving and hearing your words.
I feel I do that a lot. Like I'm quite, and even in the way that I teach, I feel I'm quite how I was taught. Like there was no, you never ever got a response. I never ever got a response to anything. Like it was always like, here's another fairy tale. Here's another like line to borrow. Like, no, go and pick some poo or whatever. Like the learning is not to an adult. You're like, oh my God, these gifts and these seeds that I was given, but I was never given given a direct answer to anything.
It's funny what that feels in us, because recently I asked a queer a question and she said, no, it only means this. And I felt so disheartened of like, oh, that's the end of the line, and thinking, no, just honouring the rebel in all of us, and especially in the adolescence today, of like that adolescent archetype of that there isn't an end of the line. That's not really the answer.
And it's so funny sometimes when I listen back on these talks that I do, I'm like, oh, that's completely opposite from what I said last time. But it's what's true based on the way the question was framed. But the question from an English perspective could be the same question. I get why people get confused.
Yeah, you're in that both the resonance of language and you as a healer reading what the person's really asking beneath the question. Yeah, that's really beautiful too. There's so many things you and I can talk about. I wonder if we've spoken to this already. How do you feel working with the other dimensions?
I feel blessed to understand that they exist. At the same time, I feel a desire that something's emerging in me to share more around our protection and discernment and understanding of them also. That hasn't come through yet, but I feel that my work will be going that way to some degree. Some dimensions aren't made to be messed with, except to get out the life force or the modi that needs to be gotten from there. We don't need to stay there. I don't hear that spoken about often.
And I'm curious too, as a kayakor of Romiromi, how does it, you know, this is just a really key question right now around how do we share cultural practices and ways of knowing and ways of being that are intrinsic to humans, also teach about cultural appropriation?
I don't think there's an easy answer, and it's something I think about often. The way I've been moving with that has been to have discussions on it. So it's actually a section of the training is to discuss some of the different ways that different non-Māori healers have approached the practice. So some people say like Māori healing trained rather than Māori healer, different things like that. But also the history of non-Māori taking things from Māori people and the sensitivities to that. But also speaking to, as I said earlier, like my goal as a kākua is to share and activate as many healers as possible. And in Australia, many of those are non-Māori healers. And many of my non-Māori clients have a Māori heart, like, or an Indigenous heart, or I don't know, they have that ability to share. And I've seen some really, really, really powerful work from them that wouldn't have been able to come from me because of who I am. So I honour that, yet I also speak to what is there. Initially, when I was first deciding to do training, I reached out to a mentor to work through that, because I felt really a big responsibility and a real desire to honour our tupuna, this wisdom, the practices, because for me it's deeply sacred. At the same time, that had been the calling, and I came to the conclusion that I can't control the actions of trainees, but I can do my best to educate. And then once they fly, they fly. And that's always that sort of tūkana teina relationship that's in place, or the kaiakoa and tauira student relationship that's there. There's a point where they have to fly and choose their own actions and have their own repercussions and their own benefits from what they've gained. Just like with us, we're in different processes. Things don't always go smoothly. And sometimes we do the wrong thing. Sometimes we say the wrong thing. Sometimes we hit the wrong point. That's part of the journey.
I'm just appreciating what you're sharing about the piece between perpetuating perpetuating culture moving forward, and also trusting in a tauira's both authenticity and experience.
That's the energy I've set around everything for my mahi, like both with clients. Maybe it's like a naivety, but I have this like deep trust that those who are drawn to me need to be there for whatever reason. Like, I might not understand the reason or why they're talking or guided them to me, but they're here. And so I have a deep trust in that, whether it's like a tauira or a client or a co-creator, however that is. That's pretty strong in me.
And I'm curious if there's a way that you talk about protection. And I know this is also something that is really big in the healing world. And also it's such a ground in Te Ao Māori. And so I'm just curious about how you speak to spirit.
There's a number of different ways. I definitely am an advocate of following a process of opening and closing. And I also have given permission to some people to do that in English if they need to, before the training and based on the context. But what's actually coming through to share is more around the energy of whakanoa, of the bridge between humanness and spirit. And I feel that when people are a bit unsafe, it's because they're not staying grounded. And so in the opening, it's always grounding. And then staying as neutral as possible. And in that neutrality, it's like things can't touch you because you really don't care. Like, and sometimes it's a bit harsh, you know, when someone's on the table and you're like, yep, cry, yep, yell. You know, like there's because you're neutral, it's not affecting you. And I feel as if when people aren't neutral, or I'm not neutral, because sometimes I'm not, you know, sometimes something's happened and whatever, that's when we're not protected, because we're being influenced by the energies. And I feel for me that when I think of spiritual protection, I think that's the most important. But ways that we do that, the methods to help that is karakia, opening, closing, setting the space before, you know, pure, blessed seawater. Like there's methods, but I also respect that. Again, back to the individuality, that people will have different ways of doing that, and people will have different ways that resonate with them to make them feel safe, that make them feel grounded.
Yeah, and the value in doing our own work to unhook our neutrality, and just what a gift that is too. The one when we fall out of neutrality to know there's something there for us.
Totally.
Oh, that was a little gift there for me today.
Yeah, one of my coach I've been working with, she said that after every session, she writes a list of what she's gotten from that session. And I was like, oh, that's a really good idea, because some sessions I feel like I am neutral for the whole thing, but it's very rare that something doesn't go, oh, something will usually come.
Witnessing, what we learn as witnesses. Is there anything else on your heart that you feel like sharing today?
I want to thank you for this.
It's so, so fun to be in the freedom of in this kaupapa.
Yeah, totally. I'm so grateful. And I feel that connection, yeah, of the weaving and everything as well. And this has felt challenging for me as well to articulate. I feel often when I get asked questions, it's like, I can answer them quite easily because they're the common questions, but this has been beautiful because it's like, oh gosh, I'm at, like, what do I actually, you know, because you have that deep understanding of the mahi and how it weaves, that you can go that next layer. So I've been, whoa, okay, that's challenging. So I also want to acknowledge that for the space. How awesome.
I also just acknowledge your honesty. Like just your honesty and your clarity and your authenticity, because I think also the questions around like the current climate with racism and anti-racism and cultural appropriation, and you know, they're difficult questions to ask, to be asked of on the spot, and to attune to that.
I don't know about you, but I feel like I grew up in that. Like always, I don't know, it was like you always being like, okay, what, who am I, like what do I need to respond now?
That's why it's good for you to speak to it. People right now are feeling that they can't get it right.
Yeah,
you know, to speak and not to speak, and what's right and what's, you know, there, and there's a lot of that paralysis right now.
Isn't it interesting that there has to be a right or a wrong, like in general, that oh, I'm going to get it wrong. But what if you get it right? You know, what if you change something in you and others? And yes, you are going to get it wrong. It is going to be wrong. People are so different that you're going to say something to offend someone, you know.
It stands to our fear, though, of hurting someone. Whoever fear of hurting someone. And it's not just about, like, them validating us, but it's actually repercussions of that, or and the image, too, of being a good person or a attuned person or an empathic person. And I also remember just in saying this about, you know, those elders that I really respect, like I think about Manu or someone that, you know, if someone's revealing an insecurity, they might just scream that insecurity back to them, like, yeah, you suck. And just like give the full projection back, you know, and sometimes not be PC, not be nice, not be, as a way of just playing the coyote card, you know.
And we have to, and I think that's what I was trying to describe in the archetype.
Yeah,
it's like sometimes it's like PC nut, and that's the energy that's coming through, is like you have to call them out on it, like, and just name it. And then, but I mean, I wouldn't advocate for that all the time, but it's when that energy comes through that's like
confronting the fear, like, oh, you're afraid of being called this, I'm going to call you this right now, and I'm going to keep calling you this right now until it no longer touches. Totally. And stepping into those roles of what, you know, those archetypes that you were talking about. And again, I know that is always in a foundation of trust with the person, or a willingness to.
Sometimes it's scary though, right? Like there's occasionally, like, I know I need to go into an archetype, like I know that, but I'm like, oh, you know, I'm especially I find it's more so with coaching clients when I do that. And then I'm like, not always wanting to, because I'm like, I want them to like me. But I've gone through it enough times where I'm like, just part of the process. There's a state where you need to do that, and then it's the reaction, and then you have to hold that and not react after that. So it's like, get back to that neutrality and then just be there.
And also the energy leads, like what you were talking about before, when you're trying your own body. And so it's like, all of a sudden it's like, nope, that cutthroat thing is just there. And it's or that, like, that real warmth holding energy is there. So it just like leads.
Yeah. And it's almost like those komatua, you know, on the pai pai, they start like talking through you. It kind of just comes through, like telling you off. And but with love, I think that's the thing that, well, for me, it always felt like with love, even though you're being growled constantly, it just came.
The intention was clear. Well, thank you. Just a big mihi to you and for all that you've been holding in this healing series. Mm. It's been so beautiful to listen to the wānanga that you're pulling in and what this offers, especially during this Rahui time. Mm-hmm. And to be able to put you in the hot seat. And just a big mihi to your nana as well for being here so clearly. Mm-hmm. She showed up in so many things that we were talking about today.
Yeah, and I'd like to mihi in this time of those race discussions, both sides of my lineage, both my mum's and my dad's. I am who I am because of both of those lineages, and I'm grateful to be of both.
Yeah, thank you for walking both those worlds and holding them together while allowing like their unique pulse, by keeping them both alive, by not making them one, you know. Mm-hmm. Would you like to close us with a karakia? Kapapaere, kapaiate, kapaak, ki te rangi toro paki te whenua, he hua mata, he hua ara, pidi ki te rāura, ki te pati tai ora, ka rea ko te iho, he matua tō te taura, ki te haura, he poheringa i tui, te maranga i te kapinga, he oho mai rangi. Nā i oe. Ie, kai ki.
Thank you. Appreciate that.